Gosh, John, I forget how good you are at karate. That's incredible.
I know, man. I mean, it's all about the right belt.
It is. Timing, you know? Or your leather belt.
Exactly.
I feel like maybe, is that not, that's what you meant?
Not really, okay. But speaking of, Dave, wow, I'm just going to try to transition to save you. Finally, Dave.
Yeah.
Warm spring days are arriving.
Oh,
am I right?
Isn't it great? You know what? I need a new pair of shades that I don't have to baby. Do you know what I'm saying, John? I don't want to take care of them. Let me put them on, take them off, and not have to worry about
it. Hey, Dave, I know exactly
what you mean. Sorry, I didn't mean to rant.
Knock around is the solution. They've been making high-quality shades that don't break the bank since 2005.
Oh, wow.
And they've actually been my personal go-tos for years.
Oh, yeah. I love Knock Around, John. They have over 20 different frame styles, so there's something for everyone, including tons of kids' pairs.
That's right. So whether you're looking to rep your favorite sports teams, you know, like you're a sports guy, spend some relaxation time in the yard, or cruise down Broadway with the windows down like Dave does all the time.
All the time.
Every Tuesday and Thursday and Saturday. Knock Around, that's what you need.
Yeah. All of their lenses have UV 400 protection, which is basically like sunscreen for your eyes, which, by the way, I've tried that and it hurts. Use the sunglasses, everybody. With polarized adult pairs starting at $28, you can get a few pairs to leave in your car, toss in your beach bag, or lend to a friend in need.
Dave, that is such a good price that I might buy a pair just to intentionally lose them.
I don't love that logic, John, but
I know,
you do have a history of misplacing. It's Knock Around.
Don't fight me because of the karate stuff.
But it could be perfect for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, Dadville fans, don't squint through family beach days or trips to the park. Check out knockaround.com and use the promo code DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order.
That's DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order at knockaround.com. Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
Marcel.
Okay, Marcel.
Oh, you're a singer.
Well, we both are. So if we start doing harmonies, you're in trouble because it's it could either be really good or really bad. Actually,
I know Nashville is good for that country, but man, Huntsville. A lot of people don't know it's good for that gospel.
Wait, Huntsville?
A lot of people don't know that. Oh yeah, that's where you got Take Six came out of Huntsville. Brian McKnight.
I didn't know that,
dude. I didn't know that from Huntsville.
Brian McKnight and Take Six.
You know, his brother, or two brothers? His brother is one of the main dude. Yeah, his brother is one of the main guys, yeah.
Sharon Riley, oh my goodness.
I didn't know
Little
that.
Little Richard, well, he's not really, it's not really gospel, but, he started
gospel.
Gospel
with a lower G.
Yeah, right, you claim him. You claim him. That is so cool. I did not know that.
L-O-V-E, yeah.
That's funny. Last time I heard my name sung, I'm an ordained minister, by the way.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And the last time, I was trying to get my members to not call me Pastor Mitchell, because that's my last name. It's not really Onyx. And so I was like, just call me Marcel. And then they made up this song. Call me Marcel. Call me Marcel. And I was like, oh, okay. That was the last time.
When you fall on hard times,
there you
call
go.
Me Marcel.
Man, we already got a song in this podcast.
There you go.
So what we do, so Marcel, the way we start this party every time is we read what we call the brag sheet, which is like all the amazing things that you're doing out there in the world. And today, so for those who can't see Marcel right now,
which is everyone.
Yeah, which is everyone. That's except me and you, John. We can see him.
That's true.
He is parked right beside Malibu's beautiful beaches in California, which is already causing just copious amounts of jealousy from John and I.
Yes. Oh,
and also questioning if he made a good decision to even be on this podcast when he could have his toes in the sand, literally feet behind him, which is both punny because I just said toes in the sand. Anyway, I digress. So here we go. We're coming in hot. Marcel Onyx. Man, that sounds like the coolest wrestler in the history of time.
You can do a lot of things with that name.
Or
you can
a bad
go a lot
guy
of places.
On like Thor. You know what I mean? Like
absolutely.
Thor would be fighting Marcel Onyx.
Onyx.
Onyx, yeah.
With my superpowers.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what it'd just be like, you know, you're the strongest, like you're strong as Onyx. Like people hate
no,
you.
No, your superpower is just the name.
That's it.
It's just you have a cooler name than anybody else.
Like, you don't even have to do anything. You don't have to show up. People are like, dude, he's on his way. We should roll. Okay, so the Onyx family is America's first African-American family of entertainers, authors, and entrepreneurs, which consists of parents, Berthel and Rita, and their four children, Shalom, Sinead, Sade. Oh, this ain't no ordinary love. Sade, gosh. Come on now. Also known as Shasha and Shiloh. Man, you got the S's coming in hot. The kids are multi-hyphenate talents, which I've never been accused of, and truly impressive. They've built an incredible following of 6 million subscribers, which is truly insane, and received more than 3 billion views on their content. They're not only talented, they are truly inspirational and always giving back to the community in the process. They embody role models. While the family's brand is rooted in fun entertainment, they have an equal focus on education. This is so great. A really timely topic as parents all over the world have been coping with teaching kids at home. I mean, the hardest of hard passes on that whole season of our life. They've captured greater audiences recently as they were invited to participate as guests on our White House, an inaugural celebration for young Americans hosted by Kiki Palmer, and sat down with Dr. Anthony Fauci to discuss important topics about the pandemic and raise greater awareness facts. That's amazing, man. How was that?
That was crazy. I mean, and the thing about it is that they called us. So it's a whole different ballgame when you're trying to call people and trying to get on shows. But when people are calling you, it's just like, whoa. Dr. Fauci's dogs were like, what?
Yes.
Yeah, but it was cool. Dr. Fauci, he's a really down-to-earth guy, really cool guy. And the Biden, unfortunately, we didn't get to talk to them. They were very busy that day.
Yeah, you think the president would have some things to do?
Yeah, he had some things to do. But it was really cool just being a part of the whole program, and it was nice.
That's awesome. So the first question that I have is how did y'all get into this? Like, what was the sort of the way that you got into? I know you have a podcast. Seems like you guys have like every way to do something and be out in the world that you can. But how did you get into doing the videos? And how did the family become a part of that? Like, what was sort of the beginning of all
and
that?
Did it start with the videos? Did it start with YouTube?
It did. The whole thing started with YouTube. I was an ordained minister for 17 years. And my wife was a nurse practitioner. And
oh, wow.
We were in Toronto, Canada. That's where I'm from. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And my wife is from L.A. So how we
and
ended
Malibu
up making...
is kind of the Toronto of Southern California. So it makes sense that you go there.
Of L.A. County.
But the opposite, like the heat and the cold. But yeah.
Yes. Right.
So
yes,
we're the Arctic.
Yes.
We're
They're
the Arctic
exactly
of
the
Alabama's sunshine. Or of California sunshine, I should say.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we, I actually met her in HCBU or something like that. Historically Black College University. Okay. HBCU. Yeah.
We met at that.
And I came from Toronto. She came from California, and then we met down in the South. And so that's how we got to meet each other. So when I finished my studies, I moved back to Toronto. And had my church there. And I also had a marriage and family therapist practice. And my wife was there with me for approximately 17 years. And then she had finished her degrees, and then she started her nurse practitioner. And the doctors that she was working with, they asked her to start a practice out in Florida to make some good money. Those Toronto guys are like, oh, man, we're not making enough money over here. So they're like, they really liked her work ethic and just the way that she was. So we moved to Florida, and I left ministry for a while, transitioned, and went over to Florida. When she got there, it became really difficult because the Canadian doctors couldn't easily be a part of the executive branch because it was America and it was all complicated. So there was some, basically, in a nutshell, there was some complications that they didn't foresee. My wife ended up closing up that chapter, and she started to research how she can make money. She didn't fully close it off yet, but she knew that she wasn't liking all these complications. So she started looking for ways in which she could have her out. And she started researching YouTube. She saw the money that people were making. Families seemed like they were having a lot of fun. We tried it out in March with a lot of prayer. And that month, I don't know if it was supernatural, miracle, but we blew up in 1 month and made a ton of money, and she quit, and here we are.
That is nuts. So what do you think it was that resonated so quickly?
Gosh, wow. I don't know, because a lot of people were doing the same thing that we were doing. So right. I like to believe that that was just what we were made to do. We were designed to entertain. And so our mission is to tell the story, feed the soul, make them laugh, heal the heart. And I guess the mission was given to us to do that. And so we are just blessed.
So yeah, when you're making that first video, actually, let's back up a little bit. So she comes to you and she's like, okay, here's our out. Here's what we're going to do. And you're like, right. All right. And you're thinking, surely not like, oh, YouTube sensations.
Yeah, right.
But she's like, let's make a YouTube. Let's get the kids and we'll make a YouTube video.
Yeah, we weren't thinking that at all.
Like, what was that first video?
So the first videos was we used superheroes. We became superheroes. So my wife said, hey, and here's the thing. The thing about YouTube is that on the internet, period, everything is based on algorithms. Everything is based on trends. So what ended up happening is when she researched, she was like, okay, how can we be successful at this? At the time, superheroes were the successful thing. And so we went out, we bought a whole bunch of costumes. Kids jumped in costumes. I jumped in costumes. And I became like a teacher in a classroom. I was Incredible Hulk or something like that. And then they were Batman and they were Spider Girl and all sorts of stuff. And I'd be like teaching them while Villain would be like doing spitballs at them. It was just silly stuff.
Right.
And that was our first thing. We just started doing that. It was the trend at the time. Keyword optimizations, making sure that we had all those things. Those were the days where YouTube was far less complicated. And when we jumped in, we were able to just have success right away. And it was incredible. So what you did, you looked at where the trends were. Like, for instance, there was a trend where if you had a little toy, the kids wanted to watch a toy being run over by a car. So we'd take a toy, put it under the tire. Like, that was just one of the trends. And we'd just run over it. Millions and millions of kids would just be like, ah, oh my goodness, a toy is being run over by a car.
I mean, I would watch that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then part two, of course, another toy.
Sure.
You know? And so it was those days, and that didn't last for long. I think we did that for probably like 3 or 4 months. And then afterwards we transitioned. That's when we transitioned to Onyx Family. We wanted to do something that was a little bit more. See, we had to catch their attention first. And so we got millions and millions of subscribers that way with those trends. And then when we transferred to Onyx Family and Onyx Kids, we were able to do content that was more our speed, put messages to it. Things like that.
That is one of the things that's so crazy to me. And anybody that's listening that is living in a non social media or, sort of internet based career, it is crazy how much. Now this is where I date myself, because I'm 42, about to be 43 next week. And when John Jung and me started our careers as musicians, and this is, man, I mean, I feel like every word I say, I'm just getting older. Like, I'm adding a year of age every time. But truthfully, when we started, you had to worry about a couple things. You had to make a great record. You had to make a great album. You had to have a good live show. And then right as it started, YouTube and social media kind of became this thing, especially YouTube. And so, I posted a couple of these funny videos, and all of a sudden, it was just all of this traction. And to the point, I remember laughing really early on. There was a girl that came to one of my shows, and she was like, funny story, because I didn't put a lot of weight on it. I just did them, and then they just lived up there. But they would, they'd get more and more numbers and stuff. But this girl came to my show, and she's like, it's funny. I found out about you because I actually knew your funny videos first. And a girl that was in the next dorm room was watching it and said, oh, man, I love his music. And I said, what music? And she was like, well, that's what he does. And so, but that was early days. And so what's crazy about it now, and you just spoke to this so succinctly, is that was just, you put it up and then people saw it or they didn't see it.
Right.
But it's really, Instagram is like this, everything is an algorithm. And so what's so frustrating is you can have something and put it up that's a promotional piece, but especially Instagram will see that and be like, no, we're gonna squash that because we don't want to promote. We see that you used a word and we're not about promotional materials. You can leave it up or a topic. Mm-hmm. And so it gets so frustrating as an artist or someone who's trying to, promote your material because you're like, well, I'm just trying to let people know I got a show in Huntsville, Alabama. And Instagram is like, no, post something without trying to promote and we'll promote it. But the minute you try to do it. So it's interesting to hear you speak to that because the hack, the way you can hack that is exactly what you guys did, where you see the trend and you go, okay, we're going to be smarter than that. And we're actually going to lean to the trend. And then you start doing your material after. I think the thing that's so frustrating if you've been around a while is, and you did that stuff first, is then you're like, well, then I'm going to do the trend. They're like, no, we know you.
No. We know who you are. Right.
You know, it's just so much more complicated.
We came in like Trojan. We came in like a Trojan horse. Yes. We knew who we were.
Right. You snuck it in.
We knew who we were. And we knew they weren't going to like it. So we said, okay. You know, I'll tell their story. I'll show them their God. I'll do whatever they have to do.
Yeah.
We'll hide inside. We'll sneak inside. Yes. Once we get in, hello.
Yes.
We're here.
Yes. Yes.
And there got to be so many people listening right now or people who are aware of you and aware of your story that have been trying for so long. I mean, that's like your story. I can imagine like somebody who's asking like advice, not to say that you don't have good advice to give, but I mean, you have one of those stories that's frustrating where it's like, well, we put some videos up and, it just kind of blew up and people are like,
what?
Yeah. I've been trying to do that for years, you know?
Right. Now there was some strategy behind it. There was intentionality. To be honest with you, I came in hot, like I need to preach Jesus Christ to the world. My wife was like, no.
You will never
Trojan
see the
horse. You can't just ride on the Trojan horse in the
after the car. After the car gets crushed by the tire, like John 3:16 pops up really quickly.
Right. So
crush your sin.
Right. So that was my world. So it was like, was my world.
Jesus,
so
sure.
I was trying to promote it all the way, you know?
Yeah.
And, but for real, we just basically, we understood that it was a necessity to create safe spaces, for children so that they don't have to get into adult conversations and adult topics and adult issues early.
Yeah.
So I got the wisdom. I got the wisdom from my wife. I was a good husband. I listened to her, and
that's a
I got
theme on Dadville, by the way.
Yeah. I got it. And I realized that I had to protect the children just like I would protect my children.
Yeah.
I don't want my children turning on, you know, cable television and being exposed to all sorts of things. And so I figured that, you know, parents shouldn't have to turn on my channel and be exposed to things that maybe they didn't raise their children on. So we really did keep it a safe space where it was very neutral. And the issues are, our gospel is make them laugh. That's it. Make them laugh. You know, make kids laugh with some silly stuff. And we got some silly stuff. I mean, we're rapping about ketchup versus mustard. These are the issues of life in the children world that are very important. What do you put on your hot dog? What's your favorite? Ketchup or mustard?
That blew up to divide a crowd.
It's divisive. And it to the point where we had about 100 and something million kids weigh in as to which one. And
these are the issues of the day. So Murthel, going back, like you're very passionate about family, you're passionate about your fatherhood and caring for your kids and your wife. Is that something that you learned from your dad? I mean, what was your relationship like there?
Oh man. So my dad, he was also a minister. He didn't grow up as a minister. He kind of floated around and found the Lord for himself. But when he did, and I came in, I was one of the family members. I was one of the last kids. So I came in when he was, you know, the family was together. Everything was really, you know, running smooth. He was a pastor. And so I guess I got all of the anointed side of him. He was a great dad. He's no longer with us. He died in 2010. But I remember as a teenager, I went through my rebellious stage. I wanted to be a Christian thug.
such a common thing to be.
You know,
so many.
You grew up
there
in the church, and you're just like, this is boring. I need to make a, you know, everybody is making it by stealing something or doing something horrible. So I decided that I would, on the weekends, I would direct the choir, but during the week and on some weekends, I would smoke weed and go partying sometimes sell it, you know,
The good old Christian thug lifestyle.
There you go. The thug life in the manger. And so I was
entrepreneurial.
You know, nobody merged that before. Nobody had done that before. And I wanted to be the first. So I so I did a few things that was just not in my nature. I was born in Toronto and I was not born in the ghetto part of Toronto. I was born in the suburbs. So this was like I had to learn through watching things like Nino Brown and like, you know, all the shows that kind of like told you how it was supposed to be. And so I'd go out there with my friends and we just did some silly things. Anyhow, one day, you know, when we got ourselves fully involved in this thing, I remember I was coming back from this club and I was driving my dad's car. And the way I got my dad's car, I was like about maybe 17 or 18. The way I got my dad's car is that I was not coming home. I would stay out, I'd sleep out with my friends. And then afterwards, we would get into trouble. And they were really worried for me. They were worried that my lifestyle was going down the wrong path. And they felt like if they could just keep me at home, then there could be, you know, a little bit of protection, you know? And so my dad thought of this plan, you know, him and my mom conjured it up, that what they would do is every time that I'd come home to refuel, when I'd come home to get food because I wasn't eating, or I'd come home to, you know, get some change of clothes, when I got there, my room was completely clean. It was a wreck before. It was completely clean. You know, I'd see my wrapping papers, my weed wrapping papers, like sitting on the counter, no lecture whatsoever.
Wow.
And everything was just affirmation. Just like, son, you're going to be a minister one day. You're going to be a great man for the Lord. Son, you are powerful. I'm not going to school. I'm flopping out. They're speaking life into me through their faith.
Wow.
And, and then they decided to give me the car because we only had one car. And if they gave me the car, then I had to come back home because I had to bring the car for my mom to go to work and my dad to go to work. So they used ingenuity to be able to get me to come back home. So I came back home now every single night to clean house, to clean room, lovely cooking. My mom would cook me my favorite meals and all this affirmation and all this prayer over my life. So I started liking it. I was like, but I'm not living it, but I like it. I like to hear that. I like to eat this. I love the love. The love is so strong. Right. So one day I went to this club and I'm coming back from the club. And we're talking about all these girls that we checked and everything. And it was so cool. And I'm driving fast and it was raining. And we're out in like outskirts of the city. So it's pretty far. And all of a sudden the car goes out of control. To make a long story short, I crashed a car. It was a write-off, complete write-off. Fortunately, everybody was okay. So I get back home and I'm thinking I'm in trouble. Like I the car is sitting in the country road. I hitched a ride with some band that was driving down a country road, fortunately.
John Denver.
probably
John Denver.
Probably. Yeah. Please, when you see him, tell him thank you for 20 odd years ago. So I got back home. My family has a Jamaican background. So I don't want to, you know, do any stereotypes, but I mean, Jamaican people can get hot. And so I thought that my dad was going to be like, boy, come here, don't make me have to shoot you one box. Like I was really thinking this is going to be it.
Amazing Jamaican accent.
This was going to be it. I was going to get like a real, you know,
A real
throwdown with my dad.
Yeah.
And when I walked through the door, my dad calmly, I told him, like, Dad, I crashed a car and it's a write-off. Jeez. My mom had to take the bus transit to work that morning because I didn't show up. That was the first time I didn't show up. So they didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, mm-hmm. I told him that the car is a wreck. Now, this is Sunday morning. This is his high day where he's supposed to go out. He's doing visitations, doing all this stuff. Like, so what now? Like he has his board meetings. He has all these things that he has to do. And in the moment of that time where he should have just blown off the handle, he said, son, is everybody okay? I said, yeah. Gosh. He's like, well, we're going to get another car. And the next time I want you to be more careful. You're probably
Good
tired.
Night.
Go get some sleep. I was like, what? I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I couldn't believe it. In that one moment, I felt the love of God like I've never felt before. Everything was just songs and stories. And, you know, I grew up in this thing. Right. So it was just like that. But I literally saw Christ in my dad. I was like, while you were yet sinners, Christ died for you. Oh, my goodness. While I crashed a car. Like, I'm making all sorts of connections. And that was it. It was that moment that I was able to take theory, and it was the living gospel right before me. It mattered. It was meaningful. And I learned that parenting, you need those moments, and you need to be ready for those moments. You need those prodigal son moments. You need those poignant moments where you can take theory and match it with experience so that your children can understand what love, what unconditional love really looks like. And from that moment, I said to my parents, I was like, hey, I want to be a pastor. That's it. That's what I want to do. Wow. I want to free people just like you freed me. Like, and they were like, oh, really? I was like, yeah, I want to go to Oakwood University. They're like, well, here's your acceptance letter. I was like, what are you talking about? They're like, we had already applied for you. You're accepted on academic probation because, of course, you haven't been doing well in your schoolwork.
You haven't been going to school.
Right. But you're in. I was like, what kind of faith is this? You're seeding into me. You're going forward, and you're sending off my application. You're getting me approved so that right in a moment when it was time for God to do his best, I'm available. I've never turned back, guys. I literally have never turned back from that moment. I've been going forward, trying to free people, trying to preach love and unconditional love of God, and just letting them know, man, when you're loved, there is somebody out there. There is a parent. There is a father out there that is doing everything possible to love on you, to change you. And he doesn't do that by condemnation. And he doesn't do that by telling you how bad you are. He does that by seeding into you and speaking to your spirit and gifting you with what you need to be successful, what you need to be your best self. And I have not stopped ever since.
You know what is so powerful. The whole thing is powerful. The part that really pinged me the hardest, though, because it's so counterintuitive to the way that I think about parenting and being a dad, and I love that you said this, is that you need these moments as a parent to show your kids forgiveness and kindness and grace so that they can see there is something bigger out there, that God is the same. And I think about life like, how can we keep this thing on the rails? How can we have no problems so that I don't have to struggle with anything? And then miraculously, my kids will just believe the same thing I do. And to hear you say that is so convicting, because it is such a beautiful thought to think these moments of friction are the very moments our kids get to see us practice what we preach.
Yes. You know, authenticity. They want to know that you really love them. And the only way that you know that you love a person, truly love a person, is not when they think they deserve it. It's when they think they don't deserve it.
Yeah. Yeah. Golly, Moses.
Well, because we're always snapping back to that kind of thought process. We have to earn it. I mean, I'm 38 years old. I constantly snap back to that. I mean, what you're saying right now, I believe it. On a conceptual level, and I've had times where I've experienced it for sure, but you have to continually experience that to
kind of snap you back
to like, yeah, exactly. I always feel like I have to like earn that. It's like the kid coming home after he wrecks the car. As a parent, you think like, as a dad, I would only be worried about my kid. I don't care about the car, of course not. But when you're the kid, you see it differently. What a powerful experience that you had.
But unfortunately, if parents are more materialistic than anything else, or if they are brought up under sort of like an ideology or a religious type of mentality where it is, you got to be good all the time, or materialistic, whatever, these things get in the way of the message of love.
Right.
You know, we were thought of from eternity and we'll be thought of throughout eternity, regardless of what, you know, happens to us, if ultimately at the end of the day, that's the love that we were brought into this world with. We're loved eternally.
Well,
so let me ask you this question. You know, knowing the kids and you having kids and a few kids at that, how do you, like, that story with your parents is interesting because it's so grace soaked. You know, there's so much kindness and like we said, When you're something we talked about the other day on the podcast with old Double M, with old Matthew McConaughey, is this idea that like you really have to treat each kid with a different sort of according to their story and what, you know, when you think about either discipline or you think about love or you think about what gets their attention either way, you know, because all of us are so different. And I think one of the things that was so fun to hear him speak to, and we've heard other guests speak to too, is this idea that like, you can't just sort of throw the, this is how the Barnes or the McLaughlins or, you know, the Mitchells parent, like, and it works on all of y'all. So deal with it. But, you know, I think as parenting, and you would know this from your counseling, I'm sure, but as that ideology has sort of changed over the last 50 years, there's this idea that like, no, each of these kids is very different and they're going to respond very differently to your love. They're going to respond to your grace and they're going to respond to your discipline differently. Yeah. But when you think about y'all's kids, you know, your four kids, how do y'all like, how do y'all knowing that your parents knowing you went, the play here is grace. It's not condemnation.
And
it's
that,
not.
And that probably wouldn't have worked on a different kid.
Yeah. You know? It may have been lost. No. Another kid. How do y'all think about that with your kids? Like, is that something that y'all sort of think about or how do y'all manage
for sure.
that? Yeah,
absolutely. Because, Chip Ingram, he's just a brilliant guy. And I went through his course when I was younger in my younger years of parenting, and then you know I utilized a lot of his wisdom in my counseling and in my parenting. And so there's a study that talks about balancing love, grace and justice. It's a well balance, and the families that are all love but no boundaries, they do horrific. All grace, no boundaries is horrific. But right. I grew up in a Christian home and I knew the boundaries. And so when at the time that I had started my rebellion, if you notice, I was like 17, 18. I had already been at the end of my road of like, sort of like getting into adulthood. But we had worship every single weekend. We were raised in the church. Like I had not rebelled up until that point. So my parents knew me. They knew my character and they knew who I was. And so they were able to assess, possibly at that moment, they were able to assess, this is the kind of kid that could use grace. But possibly another child, you know, like for instance, when I look at my children, I have to always seek a balance of both grace and boundaries. Families absolutely need strong boundaries, clear boundaries. And when there's clear boundaries that are set, then grace makes more sense.
Yeah. And I think to your point, you make a great point. If that had been a kid who's 11, you know, obviously probably not making quite as exaggerated decisions that you were making as a 17-year-old, but, you know, whatever the version of that scale down to that age is, that play for your parents might not have worked as well because maybe the established right. – that's a great point that you knew at 17, this is how this family rolls. These are the expectations for me. Here's how I'm – so when they offer right. grace, you know only because the gap between the two is so wide. Where you look at a 10-year-old who's maybe making bad decisions and a ton of grace may not be as helpful –
So to your point, when you guys were talking about like the the 11-year-old or the 9-year-old. So when I was 9, it's interesting. I think I was 9. I was either 9 or 8, maybe. I was living in Chicago. My dad was he was doing school in Chicago. I was living in Chicago, and I decided that I was gonna set a bush on fire. And this bush was beside a whole bunch of,
wow, sure. That's very biblical.
Yeah. It was like, I saw a bush and I said, this bush needs to be burning. and they were like, no,
how are you going to know if this is a holy bush?
Unless I burn it.
Or not, if you don't set it on fire.
You know, I had to burn this thing and take off my shoes.
Give it a chance.
so anyhow.
I can already hear you telling your parents that exact story. Dad, well, you can't be mad. I had my shoes off. God was there.
Exactly. So my dad found out and he basically said, son, you know, I'm not accustomed. Because in his upbringing, his father really laid it on him to the point where I think it was abuse. I don't really think it was it wasn't a balanced way of discipline. It was abuse. And my dad determined that when he raised us, he was going to look at all the alternative ways of making sure that he is speaking to us and that he is emotionally and intelligently creating type of disciplines that make sense and that we will resonate with and that it will speak to us at the appropriate age that we're at. But when I decided I was going to burn the bush, oh yeah, I was going to get something. And he was, and he prepared me for it. He said, son, I'm going to have to spank you. And he said, and son, it's going to hurt you more than it's going to hurt me. That old saying. And I was like in my head, right. I'm sure you're so right. But you know, honestly, guys, at the end of that, when he finished spanking me, and let me tell you, I don't think he held back. Mm. The only person crying was him. He had tears rolling down his face. Wow. I wasn't even crying. And it taught me a lesson. Mm-hmm. It told me that this man did not want to spank me. This man did not want to hurt me. But what he wanted to do is he wanted me to understand that if you live your life so carelessly that you hurt other people, that's not tolerable. Mm. You cannot live your life so recklessly that you are going to hurt someone else. You might not be able to take back your actions. So I'm going to have to give you a lesson on how it could feel for some people, even a small taste of how it could feel, how pain could feel, how emotional pain could feel, how the loss of a life could feel. I'm going to give you a small taste. And at the end of the day, I wasn't even crying. He was. And that mattered more to me, to see the tears in his eyes, to see that I caused him pain, that he had to punish me in a way he didn't want to. That let me know that that's what love is. Love, if you discipline your child and your child does not know that you love them, then you have not created the kind of relationship with your child where you should even think about doing that kind of discipline. But if you can communicate to your child that love that you have for them, your child will be able to sustain any discipline. Sit in the corner, time out, whatever you come up with, that child will get it.
Right.
And it will not be something that will hurt them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wonderfully said. It's really challenging to think about. I think that's, we talk about that a lot on here too, is how, you know, so much of the work we have as parents is paying attention. I know that sounds really, you hear that and someone's like, whoa, well, welcome to being a great dad there, smart guy, Einstein. But I think it's a lot harder the more kids you have, because suddenly there's four stories, there's three stories in John's house, right. There's two that are beside you and your wife's that you're having to pay attention to. You know, you're really having to keep an eye on, like, wow, this one just doesn't care as much about these things, but she cares a lot about this. And this one's the opposite. And so when I sit with them and try to help them negotiate life, there are some things that, one, it's going to totally get their attention and they're going to get, the other completely fall on deaf ears. But it takes so much effort. It takes so much discipline on our part as dads to really go, like, no, I know my kids and I know who they are. And so I know when I need to get this one's attention or help them or what they respond to and love the most, even, you know, like one is really affectionate. One's very, needs to see time spent with them to understand that, you know, and it just takes a lot. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of attention, but it's so rewarding once you see it, bear fruit, you know, when you see, like, wow, she really understood that because I did the thing that gets her, that helps her understand, you know, as opposed to sort of like, it's just so easy to be like, this is how the barns roll, folks. But it's just so rarely. It may work on one kid, you know, but then you see the other ones are just kind of like, that ain't
so true. Yeah, you know? You're speaking like a professional dad right now. There is, you know, we can come on here and we can tell all the nice stories that we want. At the end of the day, this thing is tough, y'all. This thing is tough.
Yes, dude.
Yeah.
It's a full-time so hard.
It's a so full-time job. A lot of people would look at your situation, the Onyx family, right? And feel like, well, I don't have 6, you know, billion views on anything, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like you at a glance, you have a really unique situation because of the presence that you guys have on the internet. But I think that everybody in 2021 who's parenting kids, you know, my kids don't have a social media account yet, but it's probably coming. I mean, that's something that we all have to deal with our kids at some point. And the thing that scares me to death about it is just being exposed to kind of, you know, whenever you put something out there, you get exposed to the you know, the worst of people, just leaving these flippant little comments, throwing little daggers. And, you know, Dave and I, have, as musicians, have put ourselves out there with our music careers and all that. Right. And it hurts sometimes, you know, like it's tough to get over. And so as a parent, how have you dealt with that? Being this, you know, ubiquitous kind of brand online, and your kids obviously being a part of that in the face of it, how have you dealt with that as a dad, and how do you help them deal
with
that? Do you try to like shelter them from it at all? How's that work?
Great question. When we first started off, we started off as like I said, superheroes, and we were very concerned about how they would be the interaction. So the first thing that we did was we said, do not, we're going to start this YouTube. Nobody is going to read comments at all. You know, so we had the comments on because at a time when you had your comments on and there was any type of engagement, that's what would help your channel to also grow. So we had to look at the metric side of things. And then we also had to look at just the emotional, relational, spiritual side of things. And so we're just like, no comments. If you look at the comments, that's it. We're not going to be doing this. And that's just stuck. And that's now 5 years. And now they're adults. They're in their 20s. You know, my oldest is 22 this year. My next one is 21. The other one is 18 and one is 14. So they were at a stage in their life where I just did not want them to hear something really mean and internalize it. And then that shapes their future. So that's one of the things that we did.
Totally.
Another thing that we did was we were wearing costumes so that they didn't know who we were. So nobody knew who we were. So we could go to Walmart. We could go somewhere because no one knew who we were because we always covered up. In fact, we covered up our hands also because we were a little bit extra sensitive because we were African-American and we weren't sure if we were going to get some of those nasty, you know, individuals. There's always those individuals out there. And so we covered up as well. So we were kind of cautious. Then we just decided, you know what? We are who we are. We still didn't do the taking off the comments, but we just unmasked and we just owned how we were made and how God made us. And we just said, whatever happens, happens. Because, I mean, if God accepts us, we're good. And then that's where we did the Onyx family. And Onyx is a stone that comes in all different shades and colors. And so we always wanted our audience to never feel like this is for African-Americans. We wanted them to understand this is for everybody. Onyx comes in every shade and colors. But traditionally speaking, people associate the Onyx stone with black, with the black Onyx. And so we just owned it. And we just said, hey, whatever happens, man, bring it. Whatever happens, we're owning how we are made. And it's been quite a journey. We've been accepted. I'm sure that there's been some haters, but I don't know many of them because I don't read the comments. And when we go places, you know, we show that this world is, this world may be bad, but it's not as bad as some people make it out to be. You know, there's always media agenda to try and inflate stories bigger than it really is to take us down paths that are not genuine. I mean, we've gone to the White House. And when we went to the White House a few years ago, we had a family that had their MAGA hats on. And they were just like, whoa, the Onyx family, you know, and they just embraced us. And they were just like, we watch it and our people at our church watch it. And it's just like, and it just like, I want to tell that story and tell these stories because it's just like, people want to just separate us. They just want to put us in these little boxes to say, you are this and you're that, and you guys are not allowed to get along. And it's just like, that's just not who we are. That's not who we are. Not how our, you know. I mean, there are some people that are like that, but
it's
not
more
everybody.
Complex than that.
We're more complex. And so it's just like, I like to tell that story particularly because some people particularly want to attack people that are MAGA to say that these are the type of people that they are. And it's just like, let's get to know each other's stories. Let's get to know each other. Because I don't know how to wrap this up, but we're not what we're always told that we are.
I don't know about you guys, but I can't believe the kids are already back in school and summer's coming to an end. The changing of seasons and colors on the trees always gets me thinking, am I prepared for the next season of life? That's why I use Policy Genius. Policy Genius makes it so easy to compare life insurance quotes from over a dozen top insurers all in one place. And I know what you're thinking, but why compare, Dave? It can't be that hard to pick life insurance for my family. What if I told you you could save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius? Or that you could save $1,300 or more per year on life insurance by using Policy Genius to compare policies? When you use Policy Genius, eligible applicants can get covered in as little as a week thanks to an award-winning policy option that trades your standard medical exam requirement with a simple phone call. That's why Policy Genius was rated number one by Forbes Advisor. It's so easy to get started today. All you need to do is head to policygenius.com. In no time at all, you can work out how much life insurance coverage you need and compare personalized quotes to find the very best price for you. Once you've found your best coverage and lowest price, the Policy Genius team will handle all the paperwork and schedule, all for free. They never tack on or hide any extra fees. So head to policygenius.com to get started right now. Policy Genius. When it comes to insurance, it's nice to get it right. Well, and you know, the theme of that and what you said earlier is so consistent to me, which is one, we have to have a discipline around getting to know people to know who they are, right? Like judgment on skin color or occupation or nationality, it's a fool's errand to think that we know someone because right. of those things, right? So that's beautiful. The other thing that's consistent to what you said is there's also this discipline that's really interesting to me around social media. And I think what happens, and I've had to learn this lesson, because yes, it can be really bad, but we can also just decide not to read comments. We can also just decide to have discipline around how we think about YouTube, about how we think about Instagram or Twitter. And what makes me laugh, because I do this, is I can just be like, you know, it's either completely terrible or it's just amazing. But there's this place that we can live as hopefully developed human beings where we go, you know, I really like this part of Instagram. It's fun to see and catch up with my friends. So either I'm just not going to follow people that make me think certain things or cause me to have animosity, or I'll turn comments or whatever. I think it's so funny to me how much society right now just tends to be like, it's either the worst thing in the world, it's the best thing in the world.
Cancel culture.
It makes us, and it just makes us seem so caveman like that it's like, well, hold on, folks, like you can turn that button on or off in your app. Like if you don't like the comments, you own your account, just turn them off. And I think you know, it's really powerful to hear you speak to that, because I think there is this thing where I think as parents, again, it's so much of paying attention and negotiating these decisions is knowing we have a lot more power than we think we do about these things. And I think knowing how to think about them is also about how we have the discipline around those things. Like what part of it's good, what part of it's bad. Maybe you don't want to do it at all. Maybe you want to do it a little bit, but there's ways to negotiate that aren't as difficult, that just cause some discipline. We just need to go, I'm going to turn the comments off, and then we can do this. You know?
And at the end of the day, it's such a powerful question that you gave, John, because it's, we homeschool our kids our entire life, but yet they got affected by everything. Why? Because society came into the home and it came in your hand, and it's constantly there. They don't have to go to school to be bullied. They don't have to go to school in order to experience some terrible things that happen in our society. They're right in the palm of your hand. So we use apps called Accountable to You, and there's various apps that but that's one of them. That's a good one. I don't want to just like send all that stuff, but there's some apps out there that you can get.
Now, what is that?
And when it filters your children's ability to search, so they can't search for certain things will never be able to go on their phones or their tablets because you have that on. And that is a good way that you can parent your child to kind of like stave off some of the things you just don't want them to, you know, they're not looking up, who was the vice president during Bush's era. And then they end up seeing something they don't want to see. So, you know.
Yeah, somehow it's like, You're like, how in the world did it get here?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's great. So one more question, because I know you guys are ready. Get your feet in the sand and your booty in the water.
Sorry.
I'm working on that chorus. I think I may have something there actually. But one of the last questions I want to ask, and I'd really love your wisdom on this. One of the things that I think is really hard, you know, John and I both being artists, and you have social media and you have these accounts and you know, you want people to follow what you're doing and to listen to your music and to, you know, further career, keep your career living and breathing. One of the things that's always tricky is, and I'd love to hear, because you obviously have a lot of experience around this, is how we think about our kids. So like with ours, you know, John has put up videos of his daughter and his two girls cooking with him. It's one of my favorite things they do. And this summer, when everything was shut down last year, last summer, I posted some stuff with my kids. And but it's always been tricky to me because one of my biggest fears that I think is really interesting about this season of life, and I know we have a lot of people who listen who, you know, post pictures of their kids or have things that are interacting with their kids. One of my biggest fears in life is to have my kids sit down with me at 20 and go, hey, I didn't really say you could do that. And you sort of made a decision for me before I was really able to make a decision. And now I either have this animosity or it introduced me to this online stuff that either, you know, like you said, people that talk to me in a certain way or they recognize me and I'm not comfortable with that. And so it's really, it sort of caused me to always really be careful about what I choose to post about them. You know, because it's like they don't, you know, mine are really young too, which is one thing because they're 9, 7, and 4. But, you know, how have you negotiated that? Because that's such a tricky space to me is, and I think a lot of people relate to all of our plights of kind of like, you either want to post about them and I tell you, and you know, this as well as anybody, but in the entertainment industry, especially you realize, man, you start posting stuff about your kids, more people tend to like it. You know, they really, because who doesn't want to know someone that they appreciate or listen to their music and see the inner workings of, oh my gosh, look at, they have kids and they have three girls.
You get
two
a reaction.
Yeah, you get a reaction. How have you walked through that? I mean, is that something that resonates with you at all that you think about? Or?
Another great question. At the time that we were starting our channel, I think our oldest was about 16 or 17. And our youngest was, I believe, he's now 14, so he was around 9. He was around 9.
Okay.
He was the one that had been badgering us. He wanted to be like, not Ryan. It was another kid. Man, and I know him too. Good, great, great family. Sasha, what's the name of that? What's the name of that? That kid that Shiloh wanted to be like. Evan Tube, thanks. Good to have your kids right by you when you're doing this. Yeah, so he wanted to be like Evan Tube. He wanted it so badly. He's like, I love Evan Tube. I was like, who is this Evan Tube? Busy doing stuff. And then I looked at it and, you know, we saw it and whatever. And we just weren't on that tip at that time because that's when I was doing my thing and my wife was doing hers. But when we eventually came to the decision that this is something that we wanted to try out, and we came to the kids and we asked them if they would like to do it, they were so excited. It was amazing. They couldn't wait to get started. And because of course he was going to be the next Evan too. And so our youngest was like that. Our older ones were just like, this is something new. I'd like to do it. You know, we're homeschooled and we don't get out much. Like, let's do something different. So our kids was, let's do anything because we're not doing anything. So they were really excited. And now, like I said, they applied to university. They got accepted into their university of choice. And then they turned around and they said to us, we don't want to go to university. We have found what we want to do. We found our purpose. We're able to sustain ourselves and we're able to send a message to the world. And this is what we want to do, Dad. And that's what they told us. And they basically told us, we're not going to university. So now all three of them, two of them, the two oldest ones, they're like 21 and 22 in about a month. They made that decision. And then the 18-year-old ended up making the same decision as they had nothing to do with what we had to say, because I actually wanted them to go because I wanted them to, you know, find their husband, get married, do the same thing mom and dad did.
There was a little bit of disappointment
when they said that, because I was like, how are they going to do that? They're like, Dad, I can meet my husband online. I can do this, you know, Dad, you know? So
it's a really good impression, by the way.
So that is basically how it was. And so they've really taken the lead on what they want to do. And we've respected that. We've given them guidance, but ultimately we respect their decision. So, And as Shiloh, I guess he's a different case. Like, he liked it then. I still think he likes it now. He's gaming through the day. You know, that's a part of his homeschool, to game.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and then when he wants to do Japanese, he's like, Dad, I want to do Japanese because I want to, like, you know, I want to develop games now, Dad. Then he's doing Japanese. And then I'll barter with him. I'll be like, well, if you're going to do Japanese, then you're going to have to take up some cello because I want you to be well-rounded. So now he has to do cello, you know. And he's like, okay, I'll do it for a year. I was like, okay, drive for a year and see if you like it. So it's like that kind of bartering that's going on. But they love it, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, it's just like, I think, and you know, I think this is true for so many things that are happening right now because the world is moving at such a fast speed, is it's so hard to know, I think, what this stuff is going to do that we can't tell, or what, how they may feel in a decade. I think that's always my fear, is like, sure, they may love it now, but gosh, what if they look at you 10 years later when they're actually developed enough to sort of go like, yeah, maybe there were some parts of this, which doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. I think for me, it's just that thing where I'm like, it's just all so new. It's all so new. Right. There's nobody that you can
feel about
with
the internet the way people, like adults in like the 20s, felt about the radio.
They're
like, well, hang on, not in the house.
Let's put some limits on this radio thing. This box is evil.
Yeah.
Voices are coming out of this box.
In the box? Carl, how'd I get a Matt Smile to sing? Because they got to stick him in there.
But anything that does involve your kids, are, you know, I'm terrified of.
Yeah, it's just,
I have a healthy amount of fear about anything.
But it sounds like you guys have a conversation that is always ongoing, which I think is the best thing, you know, is that you guys aren't sort of going, this is the decision we made, but you're, you know, you're with them, kind of watching them, listening and going, you know, if we see the winds shift too quickly, too much, you know, there's probably,
I wouldn't say we're helicopter parents, but we definitely are the kind of parents that are, you know, helping to guide our children. Growing up, I remember jumping on a subway bus at the age of like 8, and I'm driving the bus with my sister, who's like 2 years older than me. I thought she was in her 20s because, you know, we're going on the bus together.
She's
11 and I'm 9, and we're traveling alone in a million, like a million odd, whatever city population. And I'm just thinking, my kids are almost in their 20s and they haven't even just gone on a bus by themselves. Like, they drive the car. They, you know, they have their license, they'll drive. But there are certain things that, like, I went riding my bike and I would just drive. I'd ride all over the place with my kid, with my friends. We'd be like riding bicycle club and we'd be going all over the place. Places that, like, are miles away from my home. I'd be digging like snow castles underneath the ground. Now I'm hearing that, you know, these things collapse after you dig in the snow. They collapse and they... But my parents didn't know any of these stuff. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm just thinking to myself, okay, there is a new level of danger that is out there. And my kids are just going to have to face it. And I'm just going to have to rely on the same source of comfort and security that my parents relied on for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great word. I love that.
Okay, so we end every interview with the same two questions, all right? I'll ask one, then Dave will ask the next. So the first question is, what is the one thing you want your kids to know?
The one thing I want my kids to know. Do they know it already? Like, is it something that they don't know? Or is it something, could it be something that they already know?
The rules are, we cannot help you at this point.
Oh, man. Oh, okay. Okay. The one thing that I want my kids to know is the thing that I believe that they already know. They are eternally loved. Mm. No matter where they go, what they do, how they navigate this life, what decisions they make, what problems they find themselves, that they get themselves wrapped in. No matter what, I want them to know, and I believe that they know this, that they are eternally loved. That will never go anywhere. And that's the one thing.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's great.
Okay, here's the big ender. Buckle up. What do you want your kids to say at your funeral?
Ooh. Whoa. Am I going to die, guys? Guys, am I going to die? Is that what?
At some point. I hate to be the bearer of bad times. I don't know if somebody told you or not. But
oh, man.
Probably.
I'm just trying to cope with the question because I didn't know I was going to die. But no, I'm just joking.
You're just going to Elijah up into heaven.
Let's see. What would I want them to say? That my dad loved me. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's it.
I love that.
That's it.
That's beautiful, man.
That's the most important.
That's beautiful. Well, thank you so much for your time. I feel like I was learned. So if there's not if there's a sentence I could say worse and it'd be more immediately apropos to what I was trying to say.
The way you said it contradicts what it says.
It was.
Have I done something? I feel like I've brought you back, actually.
You did. Thank you so much.
Like,
you went just like your parents. You were so graceful to me. You were kind. You never made me feel stupid. You were just kind and welcomed me back home with the car, even though I wrecked it, which I did wreck that sentence. But thank you so much for your time. Thank you
great,
so much. All we
the
really
best.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You. Thank you, John. Thank you, Dave. It was fun.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.